Imagine walking onto the stage to audition for the New York Philharmonic.
Oh, terrifying. Just terrifying.
Right. The conductor looks at you, raises his baton, and instead of asking you to play, I don't know, a complex Beethoven concerto, he asks you to play Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Wait, really? Just a nursery rhyme.
Yeah, but there is a massive catch. He then proceeds to spend 30 minutes staring at your hands with a magnifying glass, just analyzing every micro movement of your fingers.
Yeah, that is exactly what it feels like to face a seemingly basic problem, like a valid palindrome in a software engineering interview.
It's deeply unnerving. I mean, you are doing something you know how to do, but the environment just completely warps the task.
Exactly. Suddenly, this basic exercise becomes an intense psychological and technical microscope.
Because usually, writing code is a pretty private, comforting relationship with a machine.
Right, you're just alone with your text editor.
Yeah, you can sit in a dark room, try 100 different messy solutions, and the compiler never judges your trial and error process.
It just compiles, or it throws an error. It doesn't care how you got there.
Exactly. It is completely result-oriented. But when you step into a technical interview, you aren't coding for a compiler anymore. You're coding for a human. And humans care deeply about the mess.
They really do. They want to see that mess organized in real time. The reality of a whiteboard interview is that the journey is scrutinized much more heavily than the actual destination.
And because humans care about that messy process, top-tier engineers use specific methodologies to clean it up before the interviewer even sees it. Which brings us to our mission for today. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are exploring a highly structured approach to technical problem solving. We're deconstructing a foundational benchmark in the coding interview world, LeetCode Problem 125, the valid palindrome.
A true classic.
But we aren't just solving it. We are looking at it specifically through the lens of a highly structured methodology called the six-phase framework.
Right, because in technical interviews, the structure of your thinking is often scrutinized just as heavily as the final solution.
So whether you are actively prepping for a grueling technical loop tomorrow, or you just want to understand how elite developers organize their brains when the stakes are high, you are in the right place.
Let's look at the subject matter itself. A palindrome is simply a sequence that reads the same forwards and backwards.
Like race car or madam.
Yeah, or the classic, a man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
No.
So for LeetCode 125, you are handed a string, and you must return a Boolean true if it's a valid palindrome, false if it isn't.
Sounds easy enough.
Well, there are constraints. You have to ignore uppercase and lowercase distinctions, and you have to remove all non-alphanumeric characters.
Like spaces and punctuation. I
Exactly.
look at that and think, I mean, I could write a script for that in Python in about 2 minutes. It sounds incredibly basic. Why do massive tech companies use something so conceptually elementary as a gatekeeper?
Because interviewers aren't using this to test if you're a genius who invents novel algorithms.
Right.
They are evaluating your fundamental logic, your grasp of manipulating data structures, and honestly, your attention to detail when the adrenaline is pumping.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like treating the valid palindrome problem like a musician playing a simple C major scale.
That's a great way to look at it.
Like, if you go to a conservatory, the task itself, playing a simple scale, is something literally anyone with a year of practice can do. But the judges are watching your tempo, your finger tension, your breath control. They are evaluating your underlying technique.
Exactly. They want to see your muscle memory. Are you handling memory cleanly? Are your loops elegant? Or are they, nested and tangled?
Just a giant mess on the whiteboard.
Right. If you stumble through a basic data structure traversal, the interviewer already knows your foundation is shaky. They don't even need to hear the Beethoven concerto.
But solving it quietly in your head is a guaranteed way to fail, isn't it? Our sources emphasize the phrase walked through. Like, you have to explain the C major scale out loud while you are playing it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the walkthrough simulates how a candidate will communicate complex technical concepts to a team in the real world. The interview is ultimately a simulation.
A simulation of what, exactly?
Well, the person across the table is basically asking themselves, what will it be like to work with you on a Tuesday afternoon when the site is down and we are trying to debug a critical issue together?
I see.
If your instinct under pressure is to go completely silent for 20 minutes, write cryptic syntax on a whiteboard, and then just turn around and say, done, you fail the simulation.
Because no one can work with that.
Exactly. The walkthrough is how you prove you can collaborate.
I hear you, but let me push back on this a little bit.
Sure.
There's a fine line here. Is there a danger of over-explaining? Like, when does a helpful walkthrough just turn into a nervous monologue that eats up all the interview time?
That happens all the time.
I've definitely been in situations where I'm so nervous about communicating that I start narrating every single anxious thought. Like, maybe I'll use a hash map. Or, wait, no, that's silly. Let me use an array.
Yeah, you're describing a live stream of cognitive dissonance. That isn't communication, that's just leaking your panic out loud.
Ouch, but fair.
Candidates constantly mistake thinking out loud for effective communication. The antidote to rambling is structure. You need a rigid methodology that dictates exactly when you think, when you speak, and when you write.
Which brings us to the core strategy we are exploring today, breaking the problem down into a strict six-phase framework.
The lifesaver.
But before we get into the weeds of how to do it, I have to ask about the mechanism here. Why do we need a massive six-phase thesis just to check if a word is spelled the same backwards?
It's about biology, actually. Let's look at what happens to you in an interview. Under extreme stress, your brain's amygdala hijacks your prefrontal cortex.
Fight or flight kicks in.
Right. And your working memory literally shrinks. You physically cannot hold syntax, edge cases, space complexity, and social cues in your head at the exact same time.
So what does this all mean for the listener? Does rigidly forcing a straightforward palindrome check into six distinct phases actually overcomplicate things? It sounds like using a sledgehammer to crack a peanut.
I get why you'd think that, but actually, the framework prevents overcomplication. It acts as a cognitive safety net.
How so?
Without a blueprint, you just start tossing things in the suitcase randomly. You write a line of code, realize you forgot capital letters exist, delete it, rewrite it.
Oh, I've been there.
Then you realize you forgot spaces, you hack in a quick fix, and suddenly your simple peanut of a problem has turned into a tangled web of spaghetti code.
So the framework acts like an external hard drive for your brain. You offload the cognitive burden into distinct phases so you don't overwhelm your limited RAM.
Exactly. You isolate the tasks. You don't have to worry about Python syntax while you are hunting for edge cases, and you don't worry about edge cases while you're trying to remember the syntax.
Okay, so phase one. Before I even pick up a whiteboard marker, how do I start?
You start by clarifying the boundaries. You never assume you know the problem, even if you've practiced it 100 times on lead code.
Because they might have tweaked it.
Right. You look at the prompt. Ignore cases and remove non-alphanumeric characters. And you clarify those constraints out loud. You ask, does alphanumeric mean strictly English letters and numbers? Or are we dealing with Unicode symbols?
Or I might ask, is the string guaranteed to fit in memory, or are we streaming it from a massive file?
Exactly. You're gathering requirements like you would for a real software feature.
In phase two.
By doing that, you transition naturally into hunting for traps, the edge cases. You look for the inputs designed to break your code before you ever write it.
So not just the happy path, like the word race car.
No, you actively search for the weird, unexpected inputs.
Because in the real world, users do weird things. They give you blank text fields or weird formatting. So an edge case here might be a completely empty string.
Right. Is an empty string considered a valid palindrome?
Or what if the input is just like a string of spaces and punctuation marks? A comma, a period, and an exclamation point?
Well, think about the constraints we just clarified. If we remove all non-alphanumeric characters, that punctuation string effectively becomes empty.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
When you proactively identify that scenario out loud, you are demonstrating defensive programming. You are proving to the interviewer that your code anticipates failure.
For listeners who hear defensive programming as just another corporate buzzword, it's essentially the physical act of building guardrails before the car crashes. You get a massive mental checkmark from the interviewer because they didn't have to hold your hand and point out the cliff.
Exactly. And once those guardrails are up, phase three is brainstorming. And a strong candidate will often briefly mention the brute force approach before proposing the optimal one.
My immediate instinct, the naive approach, is just to make a new, clean version of the string. Like, I would loop through the original input, strip out all the punctuation, make everything lowercase, and save those valid characters into a brand new string.
And then?
Then I reverse that new string and see if it equals the unreversed version. Done. It's like 3 lines of code in Python.
It works, and it's super easy to read. But what is the hidden cost of creating those new strings?
The memory overhead. I mean, if you hand me a string with 1 billion characters, I just duplicated 1 billion characters in the computer's memory.
Which is why we need to talk about big O notation. The interviewer wants to know how your code behaves as the data gets massively larger.
For you listening, if you don't live and breathe algorithmic analysis, Big O notation is basically how we measure the efficiency of our code in a physical sense.
Right. When you duplicate that billion character string, you are operating at O of n space complexity. The n stands for the size of the input.
So memory usage scales linearly. If the word gets twice as big, you need twice as much memory.
And the interviewer is going to want us to be more efficient than that. We want to aim for O of 1 space complexity.
Meaning our memory usage stays completely flat. We only use a tiny fixed amount of extra memory. Regardless of whether the string is 3 letters or 3 billion letters, we don't need to buy a bigger hard drive.
Exactly. And to achieve that flat O of 1 memory usage, you need a different algorithm. You need the two-pointer approach.
Ah, the absolute hero of string array problems.
It really is.
Instead of copying the whole word, you just use two imaginary fingers. You put one finger on the very first character of the string and your second finger on the very last character, and you slowly step them toward the middle, comparing them.
So now you've brainstormed the optimal algorithm. Phase 4 is the walkthrough. You must walk the interviewer through a dry run of that logic using a concrete example.
See, this is the exact moment where people get tempted to just start coding on the whiteboard.
And that is a fatal mistake. You have to keep your hands off the keyboard. You verbally trace how those two pointers will handle the constraints you discovered earlier.
I guess I would say, I'll initialize my left pointer at index 0 and my right pointer at the end of the string. If my left pointer lands on a comma, I'll just increment it one step to the right to skip the punctuation.
Perfect.
And if my right pointer lands on a space, I'll decrement it one step to the left to skip it.
You are explicitly telling the interviewer how you handle the edge cases you found, and what happens when both pointers are finally resting on valid letters.
I'll convert both letters to lowercase and compare them. If they match, great, I step both pointers inward. If they don't match, the word is not a palindrome, and we immediately return false.
Do you realize what just happened in this simulation?
What?
By the end of this verbal walkthrough, the interviewer knows you have completely solved the problem. You haven't written a single line of syntax, but you've passed the logic test.
Oh, wow.
The code itself is just a formality now.
That completely changes the temperature of the room. The hardest cognitive work is just done. My amygdala can relax because the logic is locked in.
That's the beauty of separating the phases. When you finally transition to phase 5 implementation, you aren't juggling the logic, the Big O complexity, and the edge cases in your head anymore.
You are literally just translating your spoken agreement into code.
Exactly.
It frees up my working memory to focus purely on making the code readable. I can use descriptive variable names like left index and right index instead of just I and J because my brain isn't panicking about how to reverse a string.
Plus, there are no surprises for the interviewer. You've brought them along for the entire ride. They aren't going to interrupt you midway through your while loop to ask what you're doing because they literally pre-approved the blueprint.
Okay, so I finish writing the code. I step back. Am I done? Can I exhale and just wait for them to say I passed?
Not yet. Phase 6. You have to review your work. And I don't mean just staring at it and pretending you didn't make any typos.
Right.
You take one of those gnarly edge cases you identified at the very beginning, like the string that's only punctuation, and you manually trace it through your finished code line by line.
Like being a human debugger.
Yes. You verbally check your conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure the left pointer stays less than the right pointer, which actually prevents them from crossing over each other and causing an out-of-bounds error.
I see. I'm verifying the defensive programming guardrails I built earlier. I am proving the car won't crash.
And to formally close out the problem, you explicitly state the final time and space complexity one last time.
So I'd say the time complexity is O of N because in the worst case scenario, we only visit each character in the string once.
Perfect.
And the space complexity is O of 1 because we only use two integer variables for our pointers, regardless of the input size.
Exactly. Looking at this entire process, using a professional CAD blueprint to tack a suitcase doesn't seem crazy at all, does it?
Not at all. The interviewer isn't looking at me thinking I'm a robot for rigidly following these steps.
No, they are thinking you are meticulous. They are watching you methodically tame a chaotic situation. If you are this careful, communicative, and structured with a simple palindrome, they can trust you to handle a complex, multi-tiered microservice architecture on a Tuesday afternoon when the servers are crashing.
Because the framework scales to any problem size.
Exactly.
It's muscle memory. You practice this rigorous structure on LeetCode 125 so that when you are thrown an incredibly ambiguous, nasty, dynamic programming problem you've never seen before, you don't freeze.
You let the structure carry you when your intuition fails. Clarify boundaries, hunt for traps, brainstorm, walk through, implement, review.
It really combats information overload, like when the adrenaline spikes and you feel that desperate urge to start furiously typing code just to break the awkward silence.
This phased approach taps you on the shoulder and says, no, slow down. What are the constraints? It keeps your technical delivery paced and professional.
To pull all of this together for you listening, conquering LeetCode 125 isn't really about knowing what a valid palindrome is. I mean, almost everyone knows what a palindrome is.
Right.
The true secret to success here is seamlessly applying a rigid framework to walk the interviewer through your cognitive process. It is about turning an internal, silent thought process into a collaborative, structured, and highly visible engineering discussion.
It is the difference between simply writing code and engineering a robust solution with a team.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We've seen how taking a relatively straightforward algorithm and subjecting it to this rigorous, phased thinking yields incredible value in an interview.
Huge value.
So ask yourself this. How might applying this exact same blueprint completely transform the way you approach the unstructured, messy challenges in your day-to-day engineering work? Next time you face a complex bug at your desk when there's no interviewer watching, what happens if you stop, put down the keyboard, and force yourself to define the edge cases before you write a single line of code? Keep that in mind next time you face a blank text editor. Until next time, keep diving deep.